And with that, I'll move on to the message. And the title I have is The Life of Joseph, Dreams in a Family Reunion. And this is Joseph of the Old Testament, not husband of Mary. Dreams in a Family Reunion. And I think we all know Joseph's roots, the heritage he came from, how his father Jacob tricked his grandfather Isaac into blessing him instead of Esau with mom's help. Remember, mom said, go out quick, get me two little goats, and I'll cook what your father likes, and then we'll take some of that skin and we'll put it around your arms, and we're going to get your dad to bless you instead of Esau, older brother Esau. So let's look in Genesis 27. Some of this leading up to Joseph's life, and now we're in Jacob, his father. Genesis 27 and verse 26. After they had done this, after Jacob had kind of snuck in, maybe compromised a little bit, his standards, verse 26, and his father ate and drank what he brought, and then his father Isaac said to him, come now, come near and kiss me, my son. He was still wondering a little bit. And he came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his clothing, which mom had provided. She went and got some of Esau's clothes, and blessed him and said, so this is a critically important blessing. And we know there's so much prophetic meaning into this, but he says, surely the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Therefore, may God give you of the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth. And this has so much meaning for our country and its history. And plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you. Let nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren. And let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you. So how did Esau feel when he came in and realized this had happened, when he found out what had happened? Verse 38, and Esau said to his father, have you only one blessing, my father? Bless me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac, his father, answered him and said, and so here's the blessing for Esau. Behold, your dwelling shall be of the fatness of the earth and of the dew of heaven from above. And so I'm reading from the New King James, and this is not the best translation. Of is often interchangeable with from, and from is a much better word here. If we look at New International Version, in fact, if we look at almost any other version that doesn't pull from King James, NIV says, his father answered him, your dwelling will be away from the earth's riches and away from the dew of heaven above. And we know that the Arab peoples today are descendants in large part of Esau. And this very aptly fits where they live. New Testament translation. You see those desert pictures of the lands over there. New Living Translation. Finally, his father Isaac said to him, you will live away from the riches of the earth and away from the dew of heaven above. So much different than the blessing that Jacob received. Verse 40. By the sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother, and it will come to pass when you are restless, and we're seeing this, you shall break his yoke from your neck. In chapter 29, verse 1, so Jacob went on his journey. I've missed a verse. Go back to where we were. Verse 40, I stopped at 40, I wanted to continue. You shall break the yoke from his neck. Verse 41, so Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, and Isaac had done this because he felt he was close to death. And Esau said, the days of mourning for my father are at hand. I'll let that happen, and then I will kill my brother Jacob. And the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah, the mother, and she sat and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, surely your brother Esau comforts himself concerning you by intending to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice, rise and flee to my brother Laban in Haran. So this is Jacob's uncle. And now in 29, verse 1, Chapter 29, verse 1. So Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. In verse 4, and Jacob said to them, "My brethren, where are you from?" These people he ran into. And they said, "We are from Haran." So these are people from where he was heading. And then he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "Yes, we do. We know him." So he said to them, "Is he well? Is he still there? Is he okay?" And they said, "He is well. And as a matter of fact, coincidentally, look, there's Rachel, his daughter, coming now with their sheep." Verse 6 and 9. Now he was still speaking. While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went to the well and he rolled away the stone and let the water out and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother, or his uncle. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted his voice up and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran home to tell her father. Verse 17. So Laban had another daughter older than Rebekah, and this was Leah. In 17 we see Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. You know, just reading that makes me think of my wife. Rachel was a beautiful woman. Now Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, "I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter." But you know the story. Laban wanted his older daughter married first, and he tricked Jacob into marrying her. So deception here, and Jacob had done his own, hadn't he, gaining the blessing that he gained, a little deception. He tricked Jacob by slipping Leah into the marriage tent, verse 25. And then so it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me?" And he had to serve Laban another 7 years for Rachel. Verse 27. So Laban said, "Well, look, let her fulfill the week, fulfill her week." And so this refers to the 7 days of feasting that was traditional for her marriage. "Fulfill her week, and we will give you this one, Rebekah, also, for the service which you will serve me for still another 7 years." In verse 31. When the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, so sad situation here, and Jacob could certainly have handled things better, but he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Verse 32, so Leah conceived and bore a son. Verse 33, then she conceived again and bore a son. Verse 34, she conceived again and bore a son. Verse 35, and she conceived again and bore a son. So she was very fruitful with children. Chapter 30 and verse 1. Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children. We were just talking this morning, Becky, about Jacob being 70 years old or so at this time, or at the time of his marriage. And so time had passed as they were having all these children through Leah. When Jacob saw that Rachel saw she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or I will die." In verse 22, finally, God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, "God has taken away my reproach." So Jacob is fairly old at this point. So she called his name Joseph. And now we've reached Joseph. And she said, "This won't be the only son I will have. The Lord shall add to me another son." And Rachel later gave birth to Benjamin to complete the 12 sons of Jacob that we find became the 12 tribes of Israel. Jacob, who had grown up as the less favored son of Isaac, his father, would of course never make the same mistake that Isaac had made. Not the way to raise our children. Genesis 37, verse 3. Or maybe Woody. So we know Jacob's name was changed to Israel. Genesis 37:3, now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a tunic of many colors. And then Genesis 37 is largely the story of how Joseph's brothers came to hate him, eventually to the point of deciding to kill him. And in verse 4, but when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all of them, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Joseph almost certainly recognized the favored position he had with his father in the eyes of his father, and he probably didn't mind fawning it some with his brothers. And in verse 5, and we're at a point now where Joseph is 17 years old. Verse 5, now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers. Indeed, he just couldn't wait to tell it to his brothers. He really wanted to tell it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. And so he said, no, please listen to this dream. I really want to tell you this dream, which I have dreamed. There we were binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed, your sheaves stood all around, and they bowed down to mine. In my dream, I was boss over you, my older brothers. By the way, my brothers of the less favored wife was kind of how this would come across. How did his brothers respond to this message and the way it might have been presented? Well, the dream was offensive to them, and his desire to tell it even more disagreeable. Verse 8, and his brothers said to them, shall you indeed reign over us? You know, we don't think so, young fellow. Or shall you indeed have dominion over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed still another dream and took it to his brothers and said, look, I have dreamed another dream. So he ran over, he wanted to tell them. And this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me. Interesting correlation, and I think it's Revelation 12:1 to this. We won't go there, but about the future of Israel and the commitment God has to Israel. The sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me. Look how Jacob responded to this dream. Verse 10, so he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you? Verse 11, and his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind. The word envy we find in this translation in most is were jealous of him. That sort of envy. His brothers were jealous of him. But notice Jacob's reflection again. End of verse 11. But his father kept the matter in mind. Jacob seems to have considered the possibility that God actually was the author, might have been the author of the two dreams, and may have wondered about just what they could be predicting. Both dreams pointing to an unmistakable supremacy of Joseph in the family of Israel. Again, a lot of prophetic significance to this. The second dream to a similar role over, apparently, the whole house of Jacob, prophetically, of Israel. Very huge meaning here in the dreams. Let's know the importance of repetition of dreams. Jacob had this dream twice, dreams from God. If we look in Genesis 41 and verse 32, and so here we are with Pharaoh, and Pharaoh had his dream, and 32, and the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice, because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. And God also used dreams to reveal future events to Jacob. Did he think, you know, this could be the way we learn some things? Genesis 28 and verse 10. Genesis 28, 10 through 13. Now Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. This is when he was running from his brother Esau. It was getting late in the day. His mom said, "You better take off." And here he is. He's taken off in verse 10. He went out. So he came to a certain place and it got dark and he stayed there all night because the sun had set. And he took of one of the stones of that place and put it at his head, and he lay down in that place to sleep. Then he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and its top reached to heaven, and there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord, this is the Eternal, this is Yahweh, this is Christ here, stood above it and said, "I am the Lord God of Abraham your father, and the God of Isaac." And Joseph undoubtedly had heard many songs, or Jacob, I'm sorry, here, about this God talking to his father and grandfather. "The land on which you lie," so this is a comforting dream, he's close to home, "I will give to you and to your descendants." So Jacob was not far out on his lengthy journey, and he had a dream where God promised his descendants possession of the land he was leaving. And this goes far ahead and into an Exodus. And when the children do come back, and Joseph's dreams were an extension, an amazing picture of events leading to the fulfillment of God's promises to Abraham and to Isaac, and now to Jacob's descendants, that would dramatically culminate 250 years later with the Exodus from Egypt. God had told Abraham about this. Look in Genesis 15, verse 13. Genesis 15, 13, what God has said here. "Then he," and this is again the Eternal, the Lord, this is Christ, "he said to Abraham, 'Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they," the ones they're strangers with, "will afflict them 400 years, referring to Egypt's, to Israel's time in Egypt. So think about what God had done in Joseph's situation. He used Jacob's favoritism and the natural animosity that would result in the family of jealousy, increased by Joseph's dreams and his desire to tell them, as an avenue to bring the 12 sons to Egypt and establish his nation there, fulfilling his earlier prophecy to Abraham, which we just read here, and also fulfilling the dream of Jacob and setting up the Exodus. Through all this, we see that God does what is necessary to carry out his plan, to bring it successfully forward." I had to think about that this time. I suspect the same is occurring today in our own lives, probably way more than we imagine. And that we'll hear one day. You remember this and that as we learn what God actually did for us to direct us through this life. Genesis 37 then, in verse 13. Genesis 37:13. "And Israel," so this is Jacob, "older, said to Joseph, 'Are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem?'" I wonder how they're doing. I wonder how they're doing. I wonder how our sheep are doing. "Come, I will send you to them." So he said to him, Joseph responded, "Here I am, Dad. I'm here." And he said to him, "Please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks, and bring back word to me. I'm just curious." So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron, and he sent them, And he went to Shechem. So this was a very fateful day for Jacob and for Joseph. Verse 18. It's one of these days you don't know when you wake up. "But now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him. Then they said to one another, 'Look, this dreamer is coming. Come, therefore, let us now cast him into some pit, and we're going to tell Dad that some animal got him. Some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what becomes of his dreams.'" This plan, verse 26. "So Judah," and take note, this is Judah here. We'll see him later. "So Judah said to his brothers, What profit is there if we do it that way? If we kill our brother and conceal his blood, come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. And let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. And his brothers listened. They say, you know, that's really not a bad idea. And so Joseph is in this pit, and he's probably listening to all that's going on. Hey, let us sell him. We're going to sell him. And he's thinking, I hope that these guys are just scaring me and playing with me. Verse 28, then the Midianite traders passed by. So the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. What do we think Joseph was doing? I think he was pleading with his brothers, don't do this. Let me go home. I won't bother you anymore. Crying to them, please don't do this. He was being sold as a slave, and they took Joseph to Egypt. So as I said, this was a very fateful day when it started and when his dad Jacob decided to send him to his brothers. These traders carried Joseph to Egypt, and they sold him again. How incredibly his life had changed for the worse. A terrible experience. It was also a maturing experience for this young fellow. In verse 39:1, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of the Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. Was God involved in this? Could Joseph had ended up in a better place, given his circumstances, than the house of Potiphar? The Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown commentary says, in the house of one so closely connected with the court, Joseph received the training necessary for the high office he was destined to fill. And in the school of adversity, learned the lessons of practical wisdom that were to be of greatest utility and importance in his future career. What about these words, in the school of adversity? Well, if being sold as a slave wasn't bad enough, how did other things go for him then when he got into Potiphar's house here? Genesis 39, verse 10. 39:10. So it was, as she spoke, and this is Potiphar's wife, to Joseph, day by day, that he did not heed her, to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house happened to be inside right then. It was just him and Potiphar's wife, that she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left with his garment in her hand. He wiggled out of it, and he took off, and he ran outside. And so it was, rejected. That hurts. I don't like that. When she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, then she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, see, he, and this refers to Potiphar, has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice, and it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me. See? I've got it right here. Here's the evidence. And fled and went outside. So she kept his garment with her until his master came home. And then she spoke to Potiphar with words like these, saying, the Hebrew servant that you brought into this house came into me to mock me. And so it happened. I lifted my voice and cried out, and he ran. And he left his garment with me. And here it is, husband, I've got it. And he fled outside. So it was, what would anybody do? What would Potiphar do? What would any husband do? When his master heard the words of his wife spoke to him, saying, your servant did to me after this manner that his anger was aroused. If we look at other translations, they say his anger burned. He burned with anger. He was furious. He flew into a rage. I expect I'd do the same thing in a situation like this. It'd be hard to stay calm. You know, there's something else hidden in these verses while we're here. Note the last part of verse 9, where Joseph is talking to Potiphar's wife. There is no one greater in this house than me, except your husband. Nor has he kept back anything from me except you. because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And sin against God, said Joseph. You know, Romans 5:13 says, where there is no law, there is no sin. And we're long before the Exodus here, long before God gave the Ten Commandments, and yet Joseph recognized adultery was sin. This shows God's law had to have been taught to his people, and Joseph realized was in effect 250 years before being codified in the Ten Commandments. And we see other examples like this one here if you look at our document, the Ten Commandments. The total time that Joseph spent in Potiphar's house and in prison was about 11 years. Remember, he was 17 when this started, bringing him to 28 years of age. It had to seem like a long time since he had had his dream of his brothers bowing down to him, or his dreams, like another age, now out of question. That was just a dumb dream. But then what happened to move Joseph closer to fulfilling the prophecy of those long ago dreams? More dreams. Genesis 40, 1 through 4. Then it came to pass after these things that the butler and the baker of the king, these are high positions under the king, the butler and baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord. We don't know what they did. They did something, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. So he put them in custody of the house of the captain of the guard in prison. Well, wait a second. Look at 39:1. Who is the captain of the guard? Genesis 39:1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard. So the baker and the butler were placed into apparently Potiphar's hands here. Verse 3 of chapter 40, in prison, the place where Joseph was confined, and the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them. You kind of have to wonder if Potiphar was looking at Joseph and thinking, you know, this guy just seems like a good guy. Here in prison, in my house, I haven't seen him do anything wrong. I kind of wonder what really happened back there. We don't know, but the captain of the guard charged Joseph with the baker and the butler, and that was important, and he served them, so they were in custody for a while. Verse 5, then the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt who were confined in the prison had a dream. Both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. And Joseph came in to them in the morning and looked at them. And Joseph had changed. I mentioned growing up, and saw that they were sad. And so he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of the Lord's house, saying, why do you look so sad today? Guys, what's wrong? And they said to him, we each have had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. So Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please. Then the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, behold, in my dream a vine was before me, and in the vine were three branches. It was as though it budded. So this sounds good. And blossoms shot forth, and its clusters brought forth ripe grapes. And then I had an opportunity. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup into Pharaoh's hands. And Joseph said to him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Now within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift you up to your position, lift up your head and restore you to your place. And you shall put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner when you were his butler. And listen to 14, what Joseph said here. But remember me when it is well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. Do you think maybe that Joseph was remembering his own dreams while this was happening? But remember me. Tell Pharaoh about me. Get me out of this prison. Verse 15, for indeed I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I have done nothing here that they should put me into the dungeon. So when the chief baker heard all this and saw the interpretation was good, he said to Joseph, I was also in my dream, and there were three baskets, three white baskets on my head. And in the uppermost basket were all kinds of baked goods. So this sounds good too for Pharaoh, except for, whoops, the birds ate them out of the basket on my head. And Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation of it. The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will not lift up, but lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh from you. Now it came to pass on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants, and he brought the two out of prison, the butler and the baker. He lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. Think about what the butler and baker were thinking now. It's the third day out. And he restored the chief butler to his butlership again. He's thinking, it's happened, it's come true. And he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hands, and he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. So that had to make quite an impression on the butler, that both of these things happened. Yet the chief butler, verse 23, did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Why didn't the butler tell Pharaoh about Joseph? You know, maybe he was just too excited about being back in his job. Maybe he said, I'm out of prison and I just don't want to remind the Pharaoh that I was ever there. I'm going to put this behind me and just keep it there. Move ahead. Maybe upon being elevated, he didn't want to share any of the glory, any of the limelight, any of the attention with anyone else. We don't know, but we do know he neglected to help Joseph get out of prison. And he was a guy who could have done it by revealing what had happened here. And Joseph spent 2 more years in prison, bringing him to the age of 30. But then guess what happened? Another dream, and this time by Pharaoh. Genesis 41:1. Then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, stood by a river. And you'll remember this dream. Suddenly there came up out of the river 7 cows, very nice looking cows. They were fat, they were well fed, and they fed in the meadow. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after them out of the river, ugly and gaunt. Gaunt means skinny. These were just bony cows. They were not attractive cows. And they stood by the other cows on the bank of the river, and the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 fine cows, the fine-looking fat cows, and Pharaoh awoke. And he said, whoa, that was a strange dream I just had. And he went back to sleep. Verse 5, and he dreamed a second time, and suddenly 7 heads of grain came up on the one stalk, plump and good. Then behold, 7 thin heads, blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them, and the 7 thin heads devoured the 7 plump and full heads. So Pharaoh awoke, and indeed it was a dream. And then morning came, verse 8, and his spirit was troubled. And he sent for and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men, and Pharaoh told him his dreams, but there was none who could interpret them for Pharaoh. And then the butler remembered something. And he said, you know what? This might be a chance for me to even move up a little bit more, gain some more favor in Pharaoh's eyes. But I've got to be a little careful how I do this. Then the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I remember my faults this day. There's something I really should have done. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker, we each had a dream. In one night, he and I, each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now there was a young Hebrew man with us there, a servant of the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man he interpreted according to his own dream, and it came to pass just as he said. Just as he said, so it happened. He, that's Pharaoh, restored me to my office, and Pharaoh hanged him, the other man. So hearing this from the butler, Pharaoh sent and called Joseph. This makes me think some about Sabbath services. And they brought him quickly out of the dungeon, and he shaved, and he changed his clothing, and he came to the king. the way we present. He came to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there's no one here who can interpret it. But I have heard that you can, that this is something you can do, that you can understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it's not me that does this. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, this is what I dreamed. And he told the dreams to Pharaoh. In verse 25, then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. In other words, they're both, they have the same meaning. They are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. That could get your attention. The seven good cows are 7 years. The seven good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. And the seven thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years. And the seven empty heads blighted by the east wind, they're 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine will rise, and all the plenty will be forgotten in this land. This is really going to be a bad famine, Pharaoh. The famine will deplete the land. And so the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following, for it will be very severe. And the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice. It's the verse we read a little earlier. Because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. And by the way, I had a dream myself a few years back twice. You know, he doesn't say that, but you wonder what he's thinking here. Now therefore, verse 33, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt to plan and take care of this problem that's coming. You have to wonder, don't you? Why Joseph added this comment in verse 33? Well, actually, we can be sure that it came from God, but did Joseph perhaps again remember his own dreams, repeated twice, now 13 long years in the past? After hearing Joseph's plan to gather and store food for the good years, verse 37, the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, your life's about to change over what you woke up to this morning in prison. Inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. How'd you like to go to bed tonight, Vice President of the United States? You know, that's effectively what happened here. You shall be over all my house. All my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Wow, quite a change. His day changed a little bit since he got up that morning. Here he was, second in command over the land of Egypt. Here he was, remembering his dreams. And Joseph gathered and stored grain during the years of plenty. And then, verse 54, the 7 years of famine began to come, as Joseph had said, and famine was in all the land, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. As I was looking through this, I went to the Good News Bible Reading Program when I was in chapter 41 here, and something they put in was kind of interesting. They describe an inscription found in the Middle East by archaeologist Frieslander Karsten Niebuhr. And this was on a stone tablet in the tomb of a Yemenite noblewoman. And here's what it said when they translated it, when they brought it back and gave it to someone who could translate it. In thy name, O God, the God of Hamyar, this is a place in Aram, I, Taja, the daughter of Dezu Shafar, sent my steward to Joseph with a measure of silver to bring me back a measure of flour. And not being able to procure it, I sent a measure of gold. And not being able to procure it, I sent a measure of pearls. Maybe this was toward the end, and they just weren't going to part with food anymore. I don't know. And not being able to procure it, I commanded them to be ground. And finding no profit in them, I'm shut up here. It reminds me of Revelation and prophecy, where it said that people of this country will throw their silver and gold in the streets because it has no value. And things are only worth what you can buy with them. And I just ground it up, she said, and I'm shut up here. Whosoever may hear of it, let him commiserate me. And should any woman adorn herself with an ornament from my ornaments, things I still have, may she die with no other death than my death. So an interesting inscription about a famine and sending her steward to Joseph to buy food. Verse 57. So all the countries came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain, because the famine was severe in all the lands. And someone else heard that Egypt had food. Chapter 42, when Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, "Why are you just standing around doing nothing? Why do you look at one another?" And he said, "Indeed, I have heard there is grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us there, that we may live and not die, because like this Yemenite woman, we're going to die if we don't do something." So Joseph's 10 brothers went down. Whoops, there's one missing. 10 brothers, that would leave Benjamin, to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, lest some calamity befall him. And the sons of Israel went to buy grain among those who journeyed, for the famine was in the land of Canaan, where they were too. Now Joseph was governor over all the land, and it was he who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came to him and bowed down before him with their faces to the earth. I imagine Joseph's heart was racing and his head was spinning at the power of God and all that was happening here. Hold there and look at Genesis 37, verse 7. Genesis 37, verse 7. There we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright. And indeed, your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to mine. And back in chapter 42, verse 6, Joseph was governor. His brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces on the earth. Had to be quite a moment for Joseph. 22 years ago now, since he had dreamed that dream, that this happened. Verse 7, Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he acted like a stranger to them. And you know, he's thinking, God's doing something here. How can I make this work? What can I do? And so he spoke roughly to them. And we'll see later, he's speaking through an interpreter. He's speaking the Egyptian language. And he said, "Where do you come from?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." And Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him, because he was really cleaned up. He was dressed like royalty. He looked different. Then Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about then, and he said to them, "You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land. You've come to see if we're as bad off as you guys are." But we're not. And they said to him, "No, no, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all one man's sons." Do you think Joseph was focused on what he's being told? "We are honest men. Your servants are not spies." But he said to them, "No, but you have come to see the nakedness of the land." And they said, "Your servants are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And in fact, the youngest is with our father today." He just learned his dad's alive. And so is his younger brother, Benjamin. And one is no more. And he learned that they believe he's dead. But as Joseph said to them, "It is as I spoke to you, saying, you are spies. In this manner you shall be tested." So he's working on a plan here. "By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you and let him bring your brother. And you shall be kept in prison, that your words be tested, to see whether there is any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, you are spies." So he put them all together in prison 3 days. And he pondered this, I'm sure, during those days. Then verse 18, Joseph said to them the third day, "Do this and live, for I fear God. And that probably got their attention when he said that. I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined to your prison house, but you go and carry grain for the famine of your houses, and bring your youngest brother to me, so that I may know if your words can be verified, and you shall not die. And they did so. They went. Then they said to one another, while they're there, they're talking, we are truly guilty concerning our brother. So they're reflecting on what they had done to Joseph. For we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, don't sell me, don't do this. And we would not hear. Therefore his distress has come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, did I not speak to you, saying, do not sin against this boy? And you would not listen. Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us. Verse 23, but they did not know that Joseph understood them, for he had spoken to them through an interpreter. And it got to Joseph here. He turned himself away from them and he wept. Then when he returned to them again and talked to them, and he took Simeon from among them and bound him before their eyes. Then Joseph gave a command to fill their sacks with grain, to restore every man's money to his sack, and to give them provisions for the journey. Thus he did for them. So they loaded their donkeys with the grain and departed from there. But as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey some food that night at the encampment, he saw his money, there it was, in the mouth of his sack. So he said to his brother, my money has been restored, and here it is, it's in my sack. And then their hearts failed them, because this could look bad. How did you get that? And they were afraid, saying to one another, what is this that God has done to us? And then they all found their money returned to them, as they explained to Jacob what had happened. Verse 35, then as it happened, as they emptied their sacks, that surprisingly each man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. And Jacob, their father, said to them, you have bereaved me. Joseph is no more. Simeon is now no more, and you want to take Benjamin. All these things are against me. Then Reuben spoke to him and said, you can kill my two boys if I don't bring Benjamin back. He says here, and put in my hands, I will bring him back to you. But Jacob wouldn't have any part of this. My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, you will bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave. I will die. Joseph wouldn't let them take Benjamin back to Egypt, even at the cost of losing Simeon. But the famine got worse, and there was no choice. In Genesis 43, verse 1, now the famine was severe in the land, and it came to pass when they had consumed all the grain that they bought in Egypt, their father said to them, we don't have a choice. We're going to die. Go back and buy us a little food. But Judah again spoke to him, saying, the man there solemnly warned us, saying, you shall not see my face again unless your brother is with you. Verse 4, if you send our brother with us, we'll go down and we'll buy food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, you shall not see me again unless your brother is with you. And Israel said, why did you deal so wrongfully with me? Why did you tell him you had a brother? Why did you do this? As to tell the man whether you still had another brother. And they said to him, the man asked us pointedly about ourselves and our family, saying, is your father still alive? Have you another brother? And we told him according to these words, how could we have ever thought this would happen? There was no way we could have known. Could we possibly have known that he would say, bring your brother here? In verse 11, and then their father Israel said to them, if it must be so, then do this. Take some of the best fruit and nuts that we have. We don't have a lot, but make them for a present for this man. In verse 12, take double the money in your hand. The money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks, maybe it was some kind of oversight. They just goofed somehow. Verse 13, take your brother also. We're going to die anyway. Take Benjamin also and arise, go back to the man, and may God Almighty give you mercy before the man." So the brothers came back into the presence of Joseph, this time 11 of them. Verse 19, "When they drew near to the steward of Joseph's house, they talked with him." And now this is Joseph at the door of the house and said, "Oh, sir, we indeed came down the first time to buy food, but it happened when we came to the encampment that we opened our sacks, and there each man's money was in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight, so we brought it back. We got it back. It's in our hand." Verse 22, "And we have brought down other money also in our hands to buy food." We don't know how the money got back in our sacks. We don't know who put it there. But he said, "Joseph, peace be with you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money." Then he brought Simeon out to them. What did Joseph ask next? Verse 27, "Therefore he asked them about their well-being and said, 'Is your father well? The old man of whom you spoke.'" You know, they might be wondering, what's this guy care so much? Is that old man of whom you spoke, is he still alive? And they answered, "Your servant, our father, is in good health." And they bowed their heads down and prostrated themselves. This means they laid flat on the ground before him. Then he lifted his eyes, Joseph, and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son. And he said, "Is this your younger brother of whom you spoke to me?" And then he looked at Benjamin and said, "God be gracious to you, my son." And you know, it's a curious thing that they're watching this and wondering, why is he saying this? Now his heart yearned for his brother. He wanted to run up and give him a hug, you know. So Joseph made haste and sought somewhere to go and hide and cry. And he went into his chamber and he wept there. Then he washed his face, he cleaned himself up, and he came out and restrained himself. And he said to his servants, "Serve them a meal. Serve the bread." And they set him a place by himself and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat food with the Hebrews because they considered that an abomination. And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright and the youngest according to his youth, down to Benjamin. And the men looked at each other in astonishment. Why is this guy throwing a feast for us? Why is he feeding us? What's happening? Joseph surely knew by now this was part of God's plan. And the intent by now, including the promises of God that Joseph had heard about during his childhood, made to his great-grandfather Abraham, made to his grandfather Isaac, to Jacob or Israel. And at this point, he did something to bring Jacob back to Israel, or back to Egypt. Chapter 44, verse 1. "And he commanded the steward of the house, saying, 'Fill the men's sack with food, their sacks with food, as much as they can carry. And put each man's money in the mouth of his sack.'" You know, nowadays anyone would look at a leader and say, "Are you crazy? What's wrong with you?" But you didn't do that. Joseph was a very powerful man. "Also put my cup, the silver cup, my own special cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, and his grain money." So they did what they were told. They did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. Joseph made it look like Benjamin had stolen a highly treasured silver cup, the one belonging to Joseph himself. Verse 4, "When they were gone out of the city and not far off, Joseph said to his steward, 'Go after them. Go back after those guys. Get up, follow them, and when you overtake them, say to them, "Why have you repaid my kindness with such evil?"" Verse 6, "So they overtook them, and he spoke to them these words, and said, and so they responded, 'Why does my Lord say these words? Far be it from us that your servants would do such a thing. Look now, we brought back the money of Canaan, the money which we found in the mouth of our sacks. Why would we steal silver from you? How could we do that? Our gold from the Lord's house.'" And here's where we say something we wish we hadn't have said. "With whomever of your servants it is found, let him die." That was their recommendation, and we will be slaves to you. And he said, now also let it be according to your words. He with whom it is found, though, shall be my slave. And you guys look earnest to me. You shall be blameless. So if we find this thing here, the guy who's got it is going to be my slave. Then each man speedily let down his sack to the ground, and each opened his sack. And so they searched, starting with the oldest. He began with the oldest and left off with the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they tore their clothes. And each man loaded his donkey, and they had to go back to the city. They had to go back to Egypt. Benjamin, the one they were entrusted to protect at all costs, would never be allowed to return home. So you can imagine how they felt. Verse 18, then Judah, the guy who said, let's sell him, many years ago, came near to him and said, oh my Lord, to Joseph, please let your servant speak a word in my Lord's hearing, and do not let your anger burn against your servant, for I know who you are. You are even like Pharaoh. My Lord, ask his servants, that's us, saying, have you a father or a brother? And we said, my Lord, we have a father, an old man, and a child of his old age, who is young, his brother, is dead. So talking about Joseph again. And he alone is left of his mother's children, and that's Benjamin, and his father loves him. Then you said to your servants, bring him down to me. So we did, that I may set eyes on him. And we said to my Lord, the lad cannot leave his father, or his father will surely die. His father would die. And in verse 27, then your servant, my father, said to us, we know that my wife bore me two sons. I don't feel like that's where I want to be all of a sudden. Okay, yes. And one of them went out from me. This is okay. And I said, surely. So he's talking about Joseph again. He is torn to pieces, and I have not seen him. But now if you take the one also from me, Benjamin, and calamity befalls him, I will die. I will have sorrow to the grave. Now therefore, when I came to your servant, my father, the lad is not with us. If I come to him and the boy is not with us, since his life is bound up with the lad's life, it will happen when he sees that Benjamin is not with us, that our father will die. So your servants will bring down to the grave of your servant our father with sorrow to the grave. For your servant became surety. Now he's talking about himself. I was surety for the lad to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame for my father forever. Are we now seeing a change of heart in Judah here? The one who recommended selling Joseph. Verse 33, now therefore, please let me remain instead of this boy as a slave to my Lord, and let him go home with his brothers. Genesis 45, we might call this the family reunion. So, verse 34, for how shall I go up to my father? This is of chapter 44. If the lad is not with me, lest perhaps I see the evil that would come upon my father. And it was just too much for Joseph to hear any more of this. Then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, make everyone get out of here. Make everyone go. And he's talking to the Egyptians. Go out from me. So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud. So they're wondering, what is wrong with this man, with the governor, what's going on? And the Egyptians and the Pharaoh heard it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Does not compute. Can't possibly be true. We're hearing something that isn't right. I know I heard it, but I know it's not right. I am Joseph. His first question again. He wants to verify, does my father still live? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed. They were dumbfounded in his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, please come near me. So they came near. And then he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Don't blame yourselves. Next verse. Do not be grieved or angry because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve your lives. For these 2 years, the famine has been in the land, but guys, there's five more coming. There's still 5 years coming in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth, to save your lives by a great deliverance. So it wasn't you. Don't blame yourselves. I'm not holding this against you who sent you here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh. That's who I am now in this place. Lord over all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Hurry up and go get my father and bring him back here. Thus says your son Joseph. Tell him that. God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down here to me. Don't be slow. Do not tarry. And you shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near to me. You and your children and your children's children, your flocks and your herds and all that you have. Therefore, there I will prepare for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty. There are still 5 more years of this famine coming. And behold, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it's me. It's Joseph talking to you. It's my mouth that speaks to you. So you shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt and of all. You know, Joseph knew in his dream that Dad would bow down to him too, figuratively maybe, that he would be in a position above. All my glory in Egypt and all that you have seen, and you shall hurry and bring my father down here. Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and he wept. And Benjamin wept on his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brothers and said, it's good to see you guys again. And wept over them. And after that, his brothers talked with him. You know, there are pictures of more future events here in the life of Joseph than preserving of just his family. There are clear parallels with Christ. To Joseph was sold and entered Egypt as a slave, where going through trials, trouble, suffering, he ultimately would be exalted to the second highest position of the land, second highest office in Egypt, placed in a position where he could save his family. Christ came as a servant. He was sent ahead also to suffer for others and provided a way to save his family. Christ has been exalted to the second highest position in the universe through which he can save others. His sacrifice, what he did. Joseph had many servants in his charge. Christ will also employ the help of many fellow servants. They will be ones who prepared themselves through answering a calling, suffering with Christ, and following him. We could read in Revelation 20, verse 4, I won't go there, about when these people receive their crowns, when they're exalted. It's God's church being exalted like Joseph and given crowns. Do we realize we too are being sent ahead so that when the time is right, we can work with Christ to help him save the rest of God's family? We might not look at it that way, but this is exactly what's happening. I think people will be sent by Christ to help. You know, once in a while I just wonder who will we be sent to, about family, about friends we'll be sent to. We can picture ourselves with our mom or our dad or our brother or someone else close to us. It will be like Joseph greeting his family again. I think of my wife's father and the pain that accompanied her loss when he died. But what's going to happen one day? Last verse, let's look in John 20. And this is what's going to happen as we move ahead. John chapter 20 and verse 15. This is when Mary's beside Jesus' tomb and very distraught. John 20, verse 15. And Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" And you know, I was curious, she didn't recognize him. He was cleaned up. They didn't recognize Joseph. He just didn't look the same as a king, cleaned up. And what will we say when we're sent to people in the next age? Jesus said to her, "Mary, it's me." Genesis 45:3. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "It's me. It's Joseph." That's what they had to say. This is part of the message of the life of Joseph that we've been reading today. Like Joseph, we've been called in God's church, selected to serve future humans who have lost all hope and have the greatest of needs. Some of these people will surely include those who mean the most to us, like Joseph's family did to him. And you're showing up as a king is going to change sadness to joy, hopelessness to hope in an instant. Our calling, like Joseph's, is truly a remarkable calling. What we're here for, it's a pearl of great price. And to be able to help with this plan of God, it will be the most fulfilling and rewarding position we could possibly find ourselves placed into. Let's therefore continue preparing. Trust God to finish what He has started in each of His first fruits, and look forward to our parts in the greatest of family reunions.